Our next case is InnovaPart LLC versus Target Corporation, 24-1545. Mr. Griggs, you're reserving 5 minutes of your time for rebuttal?
Yes.
All right, okay, we're ready to go.
Morning. Michael Griggs from Boyle Fredrickson on behalf of InnovaPort. With me is Miriam Lynn, also Boyle Fredrickson. Also with me is John Piankos, the inventor of the asserted patents and also principal officer of InnovaPort. I'd like to address 4 points today. First, claim 15 of the 260 patent is not representative of all of the other asserted claims. Second, when you do look at these other asserted claims in the detail that is required, those claims are not directed to an abstract idea. Third.
Let's assume, just for the argument, that it is representative, and go ahead and address the Section 101 issues.
Address the Section 101 issues?
Yeah.
With assuming that Claim 15 is representative?
Correct.
Sure. With respect to the abstract idea, under step one. I'd like to address those in the context of those other claims because I believe there are or there is a distinctive significance between claim 15
address
and
claim 15 and address claim 15 and assume that that's representative of all the claims.
Sure.
And then give us your Section 101 argument.
Section 101 argument on claim 15. Sure. With respect to abstractness, I think important with respect to Claim 15 and the remainder of the claims that are at issue here, it's important, as recognized in Bascom, that you need to look at the combination of the elements as a whole. A lot of what Target has set forth is they parse the claims and they pick out individual components and argue that those are conventional or well-known and that the claims recite nothing more. But I would submit, including with respect to Claim 15, that when you look at the ordered combination of those limitations, it recites more than an abstract concept. With respect to Claim 15, when you look, I would have you focus on the clause where it talks about the type of data that is stored in the system, in the database.
Well, Counselor, I look at Claim 15. And I see the following: collecting, analyzing, receiving, retrieving, presenting information. Just it's manipulating information. And our past case law says that those type of claims are directed to an abstract idea. Can you address that?
Certainly. And again, this is under the assumption that Claim 15 is representative, which InnovaPort disagrees with. But if we are just looking at the claim language of Claim 15, I think you also have to consider the context in which this claim is presented with respect to the retail environment. The claim is not written in such an abstract manner that it would apply beyond that. And you also have to consider the state of the art at the time with respect to this claim and what was being done. And I believe what Your Honor just recited is an overgeneralization of that claim. and I would get back into the claim language itself. For example, with respect to the types of information that is being stored in the system and the way it is stored, it recites, I believe, about four different types of product-related information. It will talk about the price of the product, the availability of the product. There's information in Claim 15 about cross-linking one product with another, or linking one product with another product in a cross-linking fashion.
This is the one concern I have is, why isn't this just using computers in a way computers would conventionally be used? I mean, that is what one thing we think about with these abstract idea cases is, how do you assert that this is a technological innovation? What is your basis for that?
Certainly, and you know, I might.
And for me, I wouldn't necessarily agree that Claim 15 is representative. So, for answering this question, you can address the other claims if you want to.
Certainly, thank you. And maybe I would use the Ecoservices case as a somewhat analogous case as a starting point. Which again, when you look at the technical advance, you have to what are we advancing over? You know, what is the state of the art at the time? And as the specification of these patents explains, you know, the predominant method, and I think everybody's probably experienced this before, going into a store and trying to find a product. And I think it is also important to place yourself back in 1999. Before everybody had smartphones and computers in their pocket. And so that's an important lens through which you have to do this analysis. And so back to your question, what is the technical advance here? When you consider the state of the art at the time as going in to ask a store clerk who you may or may not be able to find, who may or may not have any information that may be helpful, and this is sort of similar to the Ecoservices case in that that was about washing jet engines, and it had been done, you know, by people, and they had their own ways of doing it and evaluating what needed to be cleaned. And so what this court recognized in Ecoservices, which I think is also applicable here, is this is an entire new system. This isn't something where you're just integrating one computer component into an existing system. The entire system itself was an advance over how things had been done.
So you agree, though, that this is something that could be done using pure human activity as well, right? I recognize that you're saying that the alleged or purported invention involves doing it on a computer, but couldn't this also be paralleled via human activity?
Could it be done using human activity? I mean, it's possible. I guess the question more is, was it being done in any sort of similar fashion?
Well, just the other day, I was in the grocery store, and I forgot what I was looking for, but I couldn't find it. And I asked a couple of people, and one lady led me. She not only told me what aisle it was in, but she actually walked me over and pointed it to it. That's what this pen does.
It does that, yes, but it also does other things. For example, providing a suggestion.
But those other things that it does it by collecting information, manipulating the information, right? Storing information.
That's a component of it, yes.
That's what?
I said that is a component of it.
Component.
But I think what we're talking about right here is it demonstrates that it takes it out of the realm of abstraction. It's something more than... Yes.
How so?
So if it depends on the level of, if you're just abstracting this down to collecting data, organizing it, and then presenting it, which is, you know, how Target has characterized it and how the district court below characterized it, it's more than that. For example, if you look at the claims in the 670 and the 690, you know, I won't get into the detail. But during prosecution, there was the 101 rejection under 101, and these specific limitations were included to overcome that 101 rejection.
But you know, we're not bound by what the Patent Office did in terms of that, right? So if we are going to break it down into Alice Step 1 versus Alice Step 2, can you tell me what the alleged inventive concept is, assuming that we conclude on Alice Step 1 is directed to an abstract idea?
Yeah, certainly. And again, I go back to Bascom and the ordered combination. So we're not just pointing to a single limitation. You have to look at what the claims are reciting as a whole against the backdrop of what was being done at the time, which is predominantly asking a store clerk.
But again, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just want to make sure you have a full understanding of what I'm saying so you can address it now, which is that, we have been told by the Supreme Court that if you just have a claim that's direct to do it on a computer, then that will not be eligible, right? But if there's a technological advantage or technological solution to a technological problem, then your claim might be eligible. So I want to know, what is the technological solution? You seem to be talking about, well, you can grab this data and that data and this data and provide it, but that doesn't sound like a technological solution to a technological problem.
Sure. So the technological problem at the time was having customers being able to submit a real-time inquiry using a system, for example, a mobile device or a kiosk, get information returned in a rapid manner that is accurate and correct. And in addition to that, what, for example, the claims of the 670, 690 patent get into is making a suggestion relating to a product that was not the subject of an inquiry, which goes above and beyond. But as far as the technological aspect, again, sort of like the ecosystems case, it's the entire system. It's using this type of system, allowing, a person to have a mobile device in a store that they can use to search for products, as opposed to trying to find a person who you may not be able to find and who may not have the information that you're looking for.
If you do find the person, or you use a mobile device to find the product, you've essentially done the same thing. There's no difference between asking a clerk, where's the butter, than looking up in your device and punching in, where's the butter?
Yes. Well, and I guess I would point to Your Honor's use of the word if with respect to the clerk, because as contemplated by this system, you will always be able to find the butter. You may not always be able to find a clerk, and maybe the clerk doesn't know if the butter's there. Maybe the clerk doesn't know if the type of butter you want is in stock. And so there is that's the practical application of this.
Judge Stoll's question, how is that a technological issue? Resolving a technological problem with technology?
Well, I think when you're looking at the retail market, that's the environment that we're dealing with here. This type of system didn't exist. These patents are the first time this type of system was invented. And so, as I said before, it's not as if there was already some system in place that this is an advance over. This is an advance over these interactions with store clerks.
Okay, you're in the bottom of time.
Can I ask a few housekeeping questions?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. Do you make any arguments for Claim 1 of the 670 patent that do not apply to Claim 1 of the 690 patent, or vice versa?
No, those rise and fall together.
Okay, that's helpful. And then also, would you agree that in addition to Claim 15, the district court also looked at Claim 1 of the 933 patent, right?
It did. I would characterize that as in passing.
Okay. In terms of your kind of representativeness argument, you would agree that, of course, a court can pick a claim or more than one claim in terms of representativeness. You just want it, in this instance, for there to be more claims picked as opposed to just relying on Claim 15 of the 260, is that right?
Correct. In all the cases I reviewed, the courts do use representative claims, but I have not seen it where you pick one claim as representative across six patents, representative of 55 other claims. The data engines case, for example, gets into that a little bit, using representative claims from different patents, but recognizing that there are different limitations recited that do impact the analysis.
Do I understand correctly that I think you've identified maybe four representative claims?
Yes, I believe when you look, the two out of the nine, or the 670, the 690, claim one out of the 933 patent, and then there's the 315 and 380 patents, which are directed to systems and kiosks, which are frankly quite different than claim 15 of the 260 patent. So if the court were to look and to determine the representative claim, I would focus the court's attention on those claims.
Do the 315 and 380 patents claims that rise and fall together like you told me with respect to the 670 and the 690?
You know, I would have to look more closely. I would tentatively say yes. I think those are generally directed. And again, it's sort of a different bucket, right? It's just a different type of an invention.
That's it for my housekeeping.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Counselor Wyatt.
May it please the court. Lance Wyatt on behalf of Appley Target Corporation. Unless the court has any initial questions, I'd like to touch on the claim representativeness issue. Here, the court found that claim 15 of the 260 patent is representative, and there was no distinctive significance compared to all of the other claims. Now, InnovaPort points to about three different limitations and focuses on those limitations, the first being a suggestion related to another product that's in the 670 and the 690 patent, and then a suggestion based on the user's past history from the 933 patent, and then finally, incorporation of a mobile device as the user interface from the 670 and the 690 patent. All of these claims are directed to the same abstract idea, suggesting a product or another product is really almost implicitly in claim 15 of the 260 patent.
Which, on appeal, are we able to just look at each of those individually and come to the conclusion that they don't satisfy either step one or step two and not worry about the representativeness of the claims and instead consider all of them?
Yes, Your Honor, it is a de novo review. And this is, you know, an issue of law. And here, you know, the 260, claim 15 of the 260 patent does provide additional product information. Now, there's different language that is used in the 670 and the 690 patent, which relates to a suggestion to another product, but providing information of another product isn't really distinctive. There's no distinctive significance compared to suggesting another product. Those are still related to the same abstract idea. Additionally,
one of the arguments that opposing counsel is making, at least in the briefing, is that with respect to the Lowe's case, I think there was a different outcome on it, and it was at a different stage, right? It was at the 12 and 6 stage. What is your response to just that different outcome in the Lowe's case versus the outcome here in terms of the summary judgment stage?
Yes, Your Honor. So that was the same judge down below. Mm-hmm. And in the Lowe's case, the issue at step one was that Lowe's incorrectly or improperly characterized the abstract idea. It did not focus or include the additional information that's provided beyond the product location information. So that was the issue that the court criticized at step one, that we overgeneralized, or Lowe's overgeneralized the abstract idea for failing to acknowledge or even confront this additional product information. But the court didn't actually make a determination at step one and say, I've looked at these claims and it is directed to an abstract idea or it is not directed to an abstract idea. It merely just rested on Lowe's made an improper characterization of at step one, and then moved to step two and said this idea of providing additional information, at least facially, we don't have a developed record, but at least facially, could be an inventive concept, but we need a more developed record to determine whether that's the case. Here, we got to summary judgment, we had a closed record, and in characterizing the abstract
discovery was fact discovery all concluded by the time you got to summary judgment, just in terms of what had happened in terms of the timeline of case?
Yes, so fact discovery had concluded. The lower court's scheduling order was a little odd, if you will, because the fact discovery deadline actually came behind briefing on summary judgment.
When you say behind, after you
concluded? After summary judgment briefing. So it was a little odd to have summary judgment briefing and then have a later deadline for fact discovery. But I think Mr. Griggs would agree that the parties had completed fact discovery by the time of summary judgment briefing. So turning back to the Lowe's case, at step two, the court found that this additional product information that's provided could, at least facially, provide an inventive concept. In this case, at step one, Target incorporated the additional product information into the abstract idea. The court agreed with that characterization. And then at step two, looking at the additional product information as an inventive concept, the court concluded that it's an abstract idea, and the abstract idea cannot provide the inventive concept, because here you're just providing different type of information. You have information related to product location and also information related to price of the product, quantity of the product, maybe another product, but it's still just providing information in response to a user's query. So just going back briefly to the claim representative analysis, the mobile device being used as the user interface, first of all, the 260 patent, claim 15, does recite a user interface, and the specification has both user interfaces that are mobile devices and stationary devices. But what's interesting is the mobile device that's characterized in the specification, there was some discussion in the briefing that this had to be smartphones, and smartphones weren't around until 2007, 2008. That's not what the specification says in regards to a mobile device. In the 260 patent at column 14, lines 39 through 44 at appendix 63, it states that further embodiments of the invention that include additional capabilities tailored to the needs of the individual customer are possible through the use of handheld or otherwise mobile, preferably wireless, devices. This is column 14, lines 39 through 44 on appendix 63. And the second sentence there says, such devices can include, for example, telephone or walkie-talkie type units, headphones, specialized eyewear.
Yeah, appendix 63 has columns 15 and 16. I'm not sure if I'm...
Let me make sure I'm...
You want me to look at.
I might have had the incorrect... Okay, it's appendix 62. My apologies, okay. Your Honor.
And then column
14.
Lines
39 through 44.
Okay, thank you.
So whether you look at claim 15 of the 260 patent as representative of all of the claims, or you look additionally to the additional limitations and additional claims pointed out by Innovaport, they are all directed to the same abstract idea. They all take the long-standing human activity of interacting with clerks in a store and provide off-the-shelf computer technology performing conventional functionality to accomplish that abstract idea. So unless the court has any further questions, I'll...
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We got 3 minutes, sir.
Thank you. I'd like to address a couple of points. When I was up here before, we were talking about the technological advance, and I guess I would just like to remind the court that at the 101 stage, which is just it's a threshold issue, and I don't believe it should be that high of a bar to get over. We're looking at what the claims are directed to, right? We're not considering whether it actually is a technical advance. It's whether that's what is identified as a technological advance and that the claims are directed to those. Whether that is a technological advance is a question for 102, 103.
You're saying that there is no technological advance here?
I'm sorry?
There is no technological advance here in this case.
No, we are asserting that when you look at the ordered combination in comparison with the state of the retail market environment in 1999, at the time that the specification was filed and the priority date, there was nothing like this system. Like I said, sort of like the Ecoservices case, it was an entirely new system and a way to use this type of technology that greatly improved over the system, if you want to call it, which was interacting with people at stores. I'd like to move on to another point that I don't want to get lost in this with respect to how the court's going to handle this and these issues here. And it relates to step two. As the court is probably aware, the district court made a finding with respect to what is well understood, routine, and conventional regarding the use of kiosks, citing to the Rowley reference. As we pointed out in our briefs, and as recognized in Berkheimer, that's a factual question. So at the very least, it was inappropriate for the district court to resolve that issue on summary judgment. That's a factual question that should go to the jury. As we said, Rowley actually stands for the countervailing point that the district court cited it for. Rowley called the use of kiosks in the retail environment in stores rare and experimental at the time, which...
You didn't raise this argument in your opening statement or your opening argument, did you?
No, I did not.
Yeah,
correct.
So it's not fair to do
sure.
that now.
Correct. Thank you. So unless the court has any other questions, that's all I have.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
We thank the parties for their arguments. We're taking this case under submission.